Money FM 89.3, the best of the breakfast huddle. Why it matters on Money FM 89.3.
Thanks for staying with us here on Money FM 89.3. And with just 1 month to the end of the year, time now to take a look back at the month that's just passed, although I'm not quite sure how we've gotten to December so quickly. And you know what? November has been one of the best months for Asian stocks relative to global peers. According to a Bloomberg report, the best month since 1993. The MSCI Asia Pacific Index jumped 15%. In November, set for its biggest jump since 1998. In comparison, for example, to the MSCI All Country World Index, it's up less than 6%. And that's just on the market side for November. We've also got COP27, G20, there's so much to digest from the month that was. And to help us digest all of those numbers, market moves and much, much more, we're joined on the line now by David Kuo, co-founder of The Smart Investor. Good morning, David.
Good morning, Rachel. Good morning, Ryan.
Good to have you with us. Okay, David, to start off, we're going to play a game.
Yeah, I love games.
I say a game. Actually, what I want to know is, what is your highlight of the month? And I'm going to ask Ryan to guess what your highlight of the month is.
It's always got something to do with football, right, David?
It has something to do with football. It certainly has. I mean, World Cup only comes around once every 4 years. And even though it's a bit later this year, normally it's around the summer months, but it didn't really sort of kick off until November. But I think a lot of people, a lot of football fans around the world are watching to see which is the best team on the planet in 2022.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a way to put it, right? The best team on the planet. So have you been staying up for all the matches, David?
Well, I've been watching most of the matches, but certainly one team has caught my eye, and that is Brazil. And that really is the highlight of my November, was the goal that was scored by Richarlison. So I apologize to any non-football fans out there. But even if you are a non-football fan, you have to Google Richarlison's goal against Serbia. It was the most amazing goal I have ever seen.
David, you know, I'm going to go home and I'm going to Google it, and I'm going to get grumbling from my husband sitting beside me going, I told you about this. Why do you never listen to me?
No. I think even Ryan has to agree that was probably quite an amazing goal.
Not bad.
What do you mean not bad? The cross came in from the left. Richarlison had his back to the goal, and somehow he managed to, I don't know whether you would call it a volley, a side volley or an overhead kick. He didn't even see the goal, but almost instinctively, he just popped that ball into the back of the net. The goalkeeper was flabbergasted at how quickly that ball ended in the back of the net.
Okay.
So just go and watch it if you haven't seen it yet.
I think I need to, with all the enthusiasm that you're sharing this with us. Okay, Ryan, what's your highlight of the month? I've been trying to get this out of Ryan all morning, and he just hasn't shared.
Talk about watching. So it's time to watch out for what's happening next year. And this is when we typically get the media events for those outlook for 2023 things going, and it comes with free lunches. So I am always looking forward to these type of media events. Who doesn't love a free lunch?
There's no free lunch in finance, Ryan.
Yeah, you've just got to take part in the discussion for a bit. So otherwise, I am putting that as my highlight for November, because these events, for a long time, they have not been happening. They are finally back. The time for you to meet up with all these finance analysts and everyone else you've been missing.
And I guess it's also a gauge as well in terms of how many people are hosting lunches, where they're hosting the lunches, and what they're talking about at the lunches in terms of where we're looking out for the year ahead. That's it. Ryan's year-end lunch gauge. So my highlight for November, I mean, I cover sustainability and ESG. I've got to say COP27. Although I wasn't there, I didn't get to go to Egypt. I wasn't in Sharm el-Sheikh. Wouldn't mind going for the next COP if anyone's listening. But I think there's been a lot of discussion about how far COP has progressed, or if it progressed at all. Discussion around the 1.5 degree target and loss. And I think the highlight for me for COP was really the discussion around loss and damage. That's money needed to rescue and rebuild the physical and social infrastructure of countries devastated by extreme weather. You know, they've been talking about this for such a long time. So to finally achieve an agreement on a fund, I think, is a major milestone.
Well, guess where COP28 is going to be? It's in Dubai.
Oh, okay. So
well, in 2023, actually.
2023. Maybe I'll be there. We'll see what happens. Okay, David, enough of that. Let's get into what's been moving in the markets. We've got to talk about Fed Chair Jerome Powell's comments last night. What's your take?
We certainly do have to talk about Jerome Powell, but just before that, Rachel, you put me to shame. Here I am talking about something as trivial as the World Cup, and there you are talking about saving the planet. I mean, I feel very humbled at the moment, and I'm sure you are absolutely right. We should be paying more attention to climate change. And by the way, Ryan, talking about the outlook for 2023, mm-hmm. I have just finished my outlook for 2023, oh. and just let me give you a word of warning. You don't want to read my outlook for 2023 because it is quite dire. So anyway, going back to what Jerome Powell has to say, right? Everybody was hanging on to every single word that he said. Mm-hmm. And I don't think he said anything that surprising. Interest rates are going to carry on rising for a while, but they're not going to be rising as quickly as people had thought. So many people had thought that interest rates, the Fed fund rate, would rise by 0.75% this month. Mm-hmm. But I think instead it's only going to be a half point rise. But I think he also said that there's going to be a series of smaller rate increases going into 2023. For that fact, I don't understand why the market was so jubilant yesterday, having heard that interest rates are going to be carry on rising. But maybe it was kind of a relief. It's almost like your school teacher, one, not school teacher, during my school teaching days, when the form master said, I'm going to be giving everybody corporal punishment, and instead of giving you five strokes of the cane, it's going to be two, and everybody goes, oh, fantastic, yeah, just two strokes of the cane. So anyway, my whole point is, I don't think there's any reason to be over-jubilant as a result of what the Fed chair said, but I think it was almost a kind of relief that we're not going to be getting a series of 0.75% rate increases, Rachel.
Yeah, David, on that point, right, how much are the FOMC officials on the same page? Because in the lead-up to this, you've got a bit of a hawkish drumbeat. Mm-hmm, you know, many officials were just saying, you know, rates might need to be higher. And then here you've got Jerome Powell almost singing a different tune.
That's a very good point, Ryan. I mean, have you ever had cats? Do you only have
yes.
one cat?
We both have cats.
You both have cats. Mm-hmm. Do you only have one cat?
Mm-hmm. At the moment.
Okay, right. I used to have a few cats, yeah, when I was in the UK. You ever tried to herd cats in one particular
I can't direction? Imagine.
Where are we going with this, David?
Where are we going with this? Well, the FOMC, all those Federal Reserve governors, it's almost like herding cats because they all have their own opinions. So one Fed governor comes out and says, oh, I think, you know, we don't really need to increase interest rates that much. Another one says, I think we should wait and see. Another one comes out and says, we're not done yet. So it's a bit like herding cats. Mm-hmm. And every time we hear one of the Fed governors come out and say something, we react to it. Ultimately, I think what we need to do is to be a bit more realistic. Have a look at the data that's coming out. Inflation is still relatively high. The Fed still has a lot of work to do. So whilst one governor might say, oh, I think we should pause or we should actually sort of take stock of what is happening, another one says we're not done yet. Don't listen to any of them. Just focus on the numbers themselves. And the numbers are telling you that inflation is still a problem. Unemployment is still relatively low. And so therefore, because unemployment is low, it means that the power is in the hands of the workers. And if the workers say, I want a pay rise, as we have seen in the UK, we want a pay rise in the UK. And then suddenly, if you don't get the pay rise, they're going on strike. And almost every section in the UK is going on strike. And the same will happen in the US. If they're not getting the pay rises, because inflation is up around 7 or 8%, and you only give them a 2, 3% pay rise, they're not going to be happy with that. And they're going to go on strike, Ryan. So herding cats.
And I think Rishi Sunak announced a body to help deal with the strikes that we're seeing in the UK as well. And now, David, moving from the US and bringing you back here to Asia, Ryan and I have, of course, been talking a lot about the headlines out of China, the protests that we saw over the weekend, the developments when it comes to the zero COVID policy there and how this plays into China's outlook for next year and the reopening. And before we get into your overall outlook for next year, what's your take on the developments in China? China and what this means for the outlook next year? When are we going to see a reopening?
Okay, I think it is quite worrying, Rachel, because I think we know how economies can reopen. If you have a look around the world, I think we can probably sort of conclude that maybe China's approach to COVID is a little unorthodox. If you have a look at what's happened in Singapore, in Malaysia, and the rest of the world, the way you reopen is, first of all, yes, you do lock people down. You do actually sort of restrict movements because you don't want the virus to spread unabated. And then what you do is you have a second step, which is to try and vaccinate as many people as possible. Mm-hmm. So I think that the answer really for China is you can't reopen until you get the majority of the people in China vaccinated. Only then can you actually sort of reopen and safely reopen and know that the virus is still going to be there. The virus is still around us at the moment, Rachel. But thankfully, most of us here aren't vaccinated. Most of us have been boosted. So therefore, we can, with a certain amount of confidence and safety, go out and know that we have been vaccinated. So when will China reopen? I think the answer is when the population when most of the population gets vaccinated, then they can reopen safely. But as far as trying to control the virus without vaccinating the people, I think is a pipe dream, Rachel.
But lots of encouraging signs so far to read into. Let's look into the signs for December. We've got a quite good month for November for markets. Typically, we look forward to a Santa Claus rally this time of the year. But you pointed out now, 2023, your outlook's pretty dire. So if we do get a rally, is it time to sell into the rally to brace yourself for next year?
You know I don't sell, Ryan. You're just trying to wind me up. No, the point is, I was listening quite intently to what Rachel was saying. You know, when Bloomberg said November was the best month for shares, you know, in 2022. For me, every month is a good month for shares because whether the market is down or whether the market is up, when the market is down, that for me is, believe it or not, is a good month for shares because it means that I can buy what I want to cheaply. I don't really sort of want to go and buy shares when they are horrendously expensive. I think it's like everybody else. I treat the stock market no different to going down to the wet market or going down to the supermarket. When prices are cheap, I am happy. When prices are expensive, I am gloomy. And I think the same goes for the Santa rally. We may get a Santa rally, but then again, we may not. But I will still be buying shares regardless, Ryan. So stop winding me up, please. Yeah.
So what's your outlook for 2023? David, you've teased us and told us that it's a little bit of doom and gloom. What exactly are we looking at?
I think really the top line is that growth is going to be quite sluggish in 2023. And I think also that interest rates will remain relatively high because I think inflation is still in the system. So I think as an investor, what you need to do is to focus on those companies that can survive in that environment. And generally, those kind of companies are the ones that have what I call pricing power. It's the ability to raise prices regardless of what is happening out there. And I've been having a look at the reports that have come out from many of the companies here in Asia and Southeast Asia, and I've been looking primarily at what they're saying about inflation, and almost every single company is saying that inflation is a problem, whether it is raw material prices, whether it is wages. Inflation is a problem for them. And so consequently, I just focus on those kind of companies that can increase prices. And whether they increase prices directly or indirectly, what they are trying to do is to somehow contain the cost increases that are affecting their business. And by indirectly, I'm talking about those companies that are shrinking their packaging somewhat. And I think, you know, many of the shrewder buyers from the in the supermarkets will notice that some of the packaging is actually getting a little bit smaller now. So instead of giving you maybe
shrinkflation,
it is shrinkflation, and it is a very clever way in which a company can pass on the price increases without offending buyers out there. So
I'm offended.
Are you offended?
Okay, but speaking of shrinkflation and what's happening, we're talking about other broader market stories. Ryan's got one for you now.
Talking about things going the other direction in terms of getting cheaper, and you love things get cheaper, crypto prices and crypto-related stocks. I'm looking at Coinbase down over 80% year-to-date. And I'm just thinking, hey, Dave, is this something you would love to get into because it is relatively cheaper?
Well, absolutely not, Ryan. And again, you're winding me up again.
I knew you were going to say that.
I know it's the My first day goodness. Of the month. I mean, there's no point sort of waving a red rag and sending me on the first day of every month. Look, the point about cryptocurrencies, and a lot of people ask me, you know, should I get into cryptocurrencies? And my first question to them is, what exactly are you buying? Unless you can explain to me in one sentence what you are buying, then don't buy it. And it's a bit like, I'm going back to the supermarket again. If I'm going to be buying something, I need to know what I am buying. Just because it is cheap doesn't mean I have to put it into my shopping trolley or my shopping basket. I need to know what I'm buying and how I'm going to be using it. And I think the same thing goes for cryptocurrencies. Just telling me the reason I'm buying it is because it's going up in price or because it is cheap is not really a good answer. And I think a lot of the people have paid a very expensive tuition course in terms of cryptocurrencies because they go and buy because some guy on television or some guy on radio tells them that that particular coin is going to go up to $100,000 or more. And so they think, oh, currently it's around $50,000, so I can double my money. Let's go and buy. The point is, what are you buying? And until you can answer that question, don't buy it, Ryan.
Okay, David. Well, I think Ryan's left you sufficiently wound for the day, so we'll leave it there. Thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us this morning.
You're welcome. Thank you, Rachel. And have a good day,
you
both of
too.
You, Ryan and Rachel.
Thank you. We've been speaking with David Kuo, co-founder at The Smart Investor, right here on Money FM 89.3.
Before acting on the information on Money FM, please consider if it's suitable for your own investment objectives, financial situation, and risk tolerance. To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download our audio app. That's AWEDIO. Available on Google Play or the App Store.